Survivor's Guide to True Crime includes discussions of sexually based violence and is not intended for children. Information provided should not be used as a substitute for professional medical or legal advice. Please exercise discretion and self-care. Welcome back to Survivor's Guide to True Crime. I'm Kim, and I'm covering for Kara in this intro. We are really excited to bring you today's guest. Heather Strotter was introduced to us by Christine O'Donnell, who you may remember from season one of Survivor's Guide to True Crime. Christine actually produces Heather's podcast, A Place of Yes, and it was wonderful getting to meet her, immediately hit it off, knew that this was a person and a conversation that we really wanted to bring to you as our listeners because it's going to offer a little bit of a different perspective than what we're used to. I also want to point out that Christine helped with production of this episode, and it was so much fun getting to work together again. Heather will introduce herself and tell you a little bit about her story, but she was 36 years old when her four-year-old son, Jake, suddenly died. In the 13 years since Jake's death, Heather has started a nonprofit called Jake's Help from Heaven. They've awarded $1.7 million to 1,000 medically fragile individuals, mostly children, who live within a 100-mile radius of the Saratoga Springs, New York area. A lot of them come back year after year with new needs as they age. But as y'all hear, Heather's story is one of resilience and determination in the face of unimaginable loss. So we really hope that you enjoy this conversation with Heather Strotter.
So today's guest is Heather Strotter, and we are so excited for you to hear her story. Hi, Heather.
Hey, guys. Thank you for having me on your show.
All right, Heather, we are so excited to have you joining us. We start all of our interviews off with a quick icebreaker. So Here's our question for you. What's your current binge? Your show? What are you reading, listening to? What's your thing right now?
Well, I am one of those. I'm like all in on stuff. And so that's a really good question. I just finished, and Kara, I think I like Instagram messaged you this, but I just binged through the entire Perfect Match season two, which is reality TV, like the worst of it, because it's not only just like reality TV, it is like superstars from other reality TV all coming together in a dating show. Horrible. And, but I got to tell you, like my husband and I, we go in big and we like knock it out. So that's an embarrassing binge. It does not make me like a productive member of society, but it's that. I would say that is my most recent.
Kara's always into the reality TV stuff. And I just
can't do it.
I can't.
It's not a bad thing that you can't.
There's only certain ones that I watch.
And I will say in that one, there's a few, like there's a few people I don't even know from the shows. You know what I mean? Like, but some of them, like I watched Love is Blind. So I knew some of the characters and I'm like, we get real invested in it.
Like Love is Blind is pretty much the only reality show that I generally watch. I used to watch like Project Runway, but that's like so played out now. But I watched Love is Blind because it's interesting. And so now I watch Perfect Match too. But I'm like, I'm only going to watch it when I'm in the garage while I'm working out. So it's like my very guilty pleasure. Like I can only watch it while I'm doing something very productive.
That makes sense, actually.
Which is, it's kind of embarrassing that we're like, I'm like 50 and Brian's 54. And this is sort of what we do on our summer nights. But... it is what it is.
Oh, match made in heaven.
No, it's a train wreck.
I feel in many ways that is that.
I remember watching like college again, but Rock of Love. That one was pretty bad.
Oh, Bret Michaels.
Uh-huh. That was very guilty pleasure. Like,
ooh, that is good.
Oh, so bad. And then Girls Next Door.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I used to watch that too. Holly Madison was my favorite.
I know. And it's so interesting now hearing about all the things that go in behind the scenes and like them reclaiming their power over what that production crew. And let's talk about like actual trafficking right under everyone's noses. That's what was happening there. So
I don't know, like you'd read like Us Weekly or something and what celebrities were there. And I mean, just what a mess.
And we just ate it up.
Such a different world. It was just things were so different then. But anyway, thank you for sharing your guilty pleasure. We always feel like that's such a little fun thing to just like, let's just get the most awkward thing out of the water first. like get it out of the way before we start talking like real deep stuff. You know, we've had a couple of people that have had, you know, like very intellectual things, and we're like, cool, we can't relate. Tell us a little bit about your story. We want to hear, obviously, who you are, how you got here today, and what makes you come on this podcast today.
My name, obviously, is Heather Strotter, and my son, Jake, who was my second born, he passed away when he was 4 years old. So my story is a little bit different than I think typical of like your guests. I do think there's this like interesting intersection between trauma and grief. And I feel like Jake's been gone for 13 years, but it is really in the last, I don't know, like I could even say the last year, but probably the last few years where I have really sort of embraced what I have gone through and used it as a catalyst to sort of be there for other people and to, I hate saying like shed words of wisdom because I don't necessarily think that that is accurate, but like knowing that other people are going through the same loss and knowing that other people go through this kind of loss, not as successfully, that's kind of a weird way to say it, but that some people are really stuck or really unable to continue or unable to parent their other children or unable to stay in their marriage, you know, like that it can really create this pretty downward spiral for people. And the fact that it didn't for me, like it's certainly, it is a huge loss. It is a loss that has shifted me. It has entirely changed the person that I was and who I've become. But I feel like now I'm owning all of that. And I am, you know, I started my own podcast, A Place of Yes, where I talk to other families or other people who are in grief or who are in ambiguous grief, that kind of grief of you're grieving someone who might still be there or a life that you thought you were going to have, like that kind of thing. So that in a nutshell is like where I am now, but I can certainly share more specifically about Jake and his loss and the loss of Jake.
Well, and it's truly up to you what you feel comfortable with. But we would love to hear about Jake if you're willing.
Oh, for sure. So when I, so my first son, Ethan, he was born in 2005 and he was, I mean, you guys know, like I was listening to one of you speak about, you know, that first child, right? And how everything is terrifying because you're kind of like, how, like, what do I do? Like they send you home from the hospital and you're like, okay, like here you are. Like, and I remember my husband and I was like, what are we doing? But you kind of figure it out. And honestly, Ethan, he's 19 now, but in hindsight, like an easy baby. And it was just, life was really good. And we were like, let's do this again. And we ended up having Jake 15 months later. So it was kind of like, I got pregnant when I was like, when Ethan was like 8 or 9 months old, we had him right away. We were at the time, we lived in Boston and we were going to move to where we live now, Saratoga Springs. And we decided to like kind of wait until Jake was born healthy. And that was always I always kind of talk about like my life in chapters. And up until that point, I actually thought I had control over my life, right? Like I kind of thought that you could make a plan and the universe would sort of acknowledge it and you could do that. So we were like, okay, Jake was born healthy. That's great. We're moving to Saratoga Springs. We don't need all these great hospitals in Boston. Off we go. And we moved to where my parents live. We started having this, you know, busy life because the boys were 15 months apart. But then when Jake was 8 months old, he woke up in the middle of the night with his hand twitching. It was like this weird twitch. And it turned out that it was a seizure. And I had no idea at the time that it was a seizure. Like I knew it wasn't just like a muscle spasm, you know, like I kind of knew something was horribly wrong. So we ended up going to the emergency room. There was no pediatric neurologist because in Saratoga Springs, there wasn't. There wasn't even in Albany. So they had to transport us. We ended up at this hospital in Springfield, Mass. They gave him this medication that he had this really horrible reaction to. Like all of a sudden, it was one of those things where I went to bed one night and then all of a sudden now, not even 12 hours later, my kid is fighting for his life and like he might die. And what the holy hell, like what's happening? We ended up getting him out of Bay State to Boston Children's where we spent 117 days. And it was just this crazy shift. My husband refused to leave the hospital. So he stayed by Jake's side every single night. Ethan was, what was he at that point? He was like had just turned two. So I was like, I can't be away from him. Like I have to parent. So he came to Boston. Since we had moved from Boston, we had family and we had friends there. So we kind of created this life, but I lived in a hotel room with Ethan. We put him in daycare. We did this whole thing. Well, we were just trying to figure out what was wrong with Jake. To fast forward, he was never diagnosed. They kept doing all these genetic tests. We never got an answer. To this day, we don't really know what happened, other than there was kind of like a genetic hiccup and he lost all his milestones. Finally, shortly after his first birthday, we kind of were like, we have to go home. Like we have to get out of the hospital. Cause what was happening is they'd start to be like, okay, you know, you're ready to go home. And then he'd get like an ear infection, or then he would get like something would happen. And we were just never getting out of the hospital. And at a certain point, we're like, we need to get our life back. Like, we need to go home. And we eventually did. So he had just turned one. It was shortly after his first birthday. And we just went back to this house that we had abruptly left one night in January, went home in May, and we just had to acclimate to this new life. Before, he was an 8-month-old. So he was crawling and cruising and like feeding himself and kind of doing all the things and kind of doing them quicker because he had a brother 15 months older and all he wanted to do was keep up. So we came home and we just acclimated to this life, like this sort of different life. And to be honest, I think we did a good job. Like we created a life that we loved, you know, like it was a little different than the picture in our head. It was definitely not the, you know, I tell this story sometimes where I couldn't wait until like that summer, because I wanted to like go on like a beach vacation with my boys and walk on the beach with like holding each one. And it was always just this, I don't know, like just this picture in my head. And that never happened, right? Like it was one of those things. And it's the thing that 13 years later can still bring tears to my eyes sometimes, even though it's just this thought that I had and it never came true. But we figured out how to like have this great life together, how to find ways to have Jake be really incorporated in everything, how to still be good parents to Ethan so he could do his thing. And fast forward, when Jake was 4 years old, he unexpectedly passed away. I was feeding him. He kind of like aspirated. I screamed at Ethan, who was 5 at the time, to call 911. He called 911. My house instantly filled up with paramedics and the fire and police and all of that. And we got transported to the hospital. I was pretty sure that I sort of knew how this was going to end. And I had called my husband, who was at a business meeting. And I was like, you need to come home. I think Jake just died. And I always think about what that phone call, like from his perspective, must be like. And we actually talked about it on A Place of Yes a little bit, but I'd always thought the worst thing that had happened to me at that point was that Jake got sick, you know, because it's your kid and you're like, you're just like, how can this be? Like how, you know, I would take all of this stuff and why is this happening to my poor little, you know, my 8-month-old, or, you know, and why at 4 is he living this complicated life? But then I quickly realized that A, you have no control over anything. And just because you have one bad day doesn't mean you can't have a lot of them and worse ones. And so he passed away on December 8th, 2010. And, you know, it's just been this really hard journey of trying to figure out. It's like, I always, you know, like how I instantly just wanted to figure out a way to keep his memory alive. Like I just, and for me as a mom, I just couldn't, I needed to have him still be present. I still needed to talk about him. And part of it is in the beginning, everyone wants to be there for you, but then, and this is, I think, a little bit where there's like a trauma grief intersect, right? Like you're working through your stuff, but then people don't want to hear it anymore. And I kind of had to create for myself this life in which I could still talk about Jake and could still keep his memory alive and still just do that. So that's kind of how I ended up being here, is just we started a foundation. I created a whole world for myself where I can still be Jake's mom and still talk through it all, regardless of whether people want me to or not.
Well, and not just talk through it, but you continue to provide something that maybe you didn't have when you were going through that. So talk a little bit about your organization, because I think that this is fascinating. And then we'll come back, because this is a huge crossover here, and you'll learn really quickly why we were so excited to have Heather on. But tell us a little bit about the organization now.
So we started an organization, honestly, very quickly after he passed. And I remember being in the car with Brian and just being like, just feeling like I have to do something. Like I need to, I need to take all of the stuff that like that, because I had to advocate for Jake. I had to like fight with insurance. I had to like make sure he got the therapies he needed. Like everything was a battle, and I was pretty good at it. And I just felt like this huge part of who I had become, if I didn't figure out what to do with that, like I didn't know what I was like, how I would fill that part of me. So we talked about like, hey, there's got to be other families like us. And this was 13 years ago, where yes, there was Facebook, but there wasn't. The world still seemed very isolated, like as a special needs, rare kid, diseases, like none of that really, it existed, but not really. I felt super alone. Like I didn't even know if there were other families like me. But we kind of realized that we wanted to see what there was and how we could help. So we started an organization, and the name of it is Jake's Help from Heaven. I don't remember exactly how we even came up with the name, but we loved it because it kind of embodied exactly what we wanted to do. We wanted to help other kids like Jake, other families like ours, and we wanted to sort of do it in his honor, in his memory, in his name. So we help families in our area who have, you know, cerebral palsy, any kind of physical disability, any kind of multiple medical challenges. You know, some people are just dealt a really shitty hand. And you know, a lot of these kids are fighting really hard battles. And we were fortunate enough when it happened that like my husband literally left his job and was still paid because he worked for my family. But he was able to spend those 117 days in the hospital. Like that's not the normal experience. Like that wasn't a lot of the families we met in the hospital. Like these moms and dads love their kids the same way we love Jake, but they had to go to work. Like they couldn't be there all the time. And we just wanted to, I don't know, make life easier for those families, you know? And once we moved back to Saratoga after we left Boston, we were constantly back and forth because his doctors were all in Boston. And we would go and we would get a hotel room, and it would, you know, it'd be a doctor's visit, but it'd be like a 3-day thing in Boston, and it was expensive. So we wanted to just help families. And that is, I always say we didn't really have any idea what we were doing, because we just were like, let's start this. Let's find people. Let's help people. Like, and it just seemed very simple, but we ended up kind of being pretty good at it. And since we started, we have awarded like $1.7 million in grants to families in our area. And we have, we've really made a difference for a lot of families' lives. And they have, and for me, it has just been, I mean, at the risk of being totally cliche, it's just been so rewarding, because it's taking something really horrible that happened to me, but it's using it for a greater good. And it's making a difference, you know, and so it feels good. And I get to talk about Jake. And, you know, I mean, I get to kind of keep him really present.
Well, and if our listeners haven't already connected those dots, this is exactly why we were so excited to have Heather on. You'll remember Christine from last season of the podcast. She connected Kara and I with Heather, and it was an immediate love fest where we hop on a FaceTime and we're all immediately off the rails with, you know, dark humor, but we're also very action oriented. And I think that's what's so outstanding, especially with how quickly you turned and started doing those things. What struck me is that you do want to talk about him. You do want to keep his memory alive. It's not painful for you to talk about him. It would be more painful 100%. For you to not. And that's something that Kara and I have discussed in a variety of different ways, is just that look and like, you know, somebody's thinking about it, but they're not asking you. Has that been your experience when talking about grief and loss, especially with a child?
I think that, you know, and I kind of touched on this earlier, like in the beginning, I think everybody wants to be there for you, right? Like everyone wants to be like, and not that it's a competition, but sort of like, oh, I took her for a walk, or I brought her coffee, and oh, she like, it just was like encompassing, like, and almost stifling, and, you know, because you're kind of in your own space and you don't really know, but But I remember very vividly, like all of a sudden, you know, after the services and sort of when Brian started going back to work and, you know, and Ethan was in school. And I remember just being like, okay, where's everybody now? You know, kind of like, what am I even supposed to do? There was this point where everyone was there, and then there was a point where no one was there. And it didn't seem like a transition. It just seemed really, and I don't know if it was abrupt or not, but to me, it seemed super abrupt. And I always try very much to remember that whenever there is someone going through something similar to what we're going through, because at a certain point, everyone gets back to their life, but you sort of don't. Like, your life is forever altered. And that's where I think it's really hard. And that's where I try to be more empathetic, or be more like, just kind of not, I don't want to say in someone's face, because if they don't want to be grieving with me, then I don't force it. But like, just being cognizant of that shift, of that drop off, because to me, it felt really sudden. It felt like everyone wants to help me. Nobody wants to help me. So I try to be there more in that space.
I think that is so common. And like we already said, it's something that is similar between any type of trauma and a grief situation, is that everyone wants to help. They want to do stuff. But then it's almost like, this is one of the things that we talked about when we had like our pre-interview call. It's almost like beyond a certain point, people don't want to bring it up.
Exactly.
Right? There's this other thing that's like a commonality here, where when I first started sharing, you know, our listeners will not be new to this story. I was talking to Elizabeth Smart, and she said, "What stopped you from sharing for so long?" And I said, "Well, it's the look. It's when people find out about your story and they give you this look and they don't know how to deal with it." And I think that's something that is a commonality that we've discussed between grief and trauma. When people find out what you've been through, they don't know how to deal with it. So would you like to speak to that?
I have so many things to say on that, because it's true. It's sort of that, like, you know, elephant in the room syndrome.
Yeah. This is the perfect place to do it.
You know, and I can remember the first time I don't remember what the event was, but there was something that like Brian and I had or didn't have to go to, but we were like, you know what, like, let's just go. Let's get this like first time seeing people in a different setting after Jake, that let's just get it out of the way. And I am not saying I handled it 100% correctly, because I was not eating a ton at the time. Like, I was in this kind of like really shifty, like still grief stage. I had like lost some weight. Like, and I pre-gamed with like two dirty martinis. So I will set the stage with that, that it was not my finest hour. But I remember vividly walking into this event, and it was almost like the seas parted and people just looked at us. And I was like, holy crap, I'm not ready for this. Like, I wanted to turn around and go home. And then there was like, then people just flocked. And it was like, they didn't flock to me and Brian. They like flocked to me. And it was weird. It was like, I felt like a freak. Like, I felt like people did not, like I was no longer the person I was 4 months before. Like, I was this different person. And I remember just being really like, wanting to answer and wanting to be nice, because I kind of still like was like, I you guys talk about it, one of the things, but like, I wanted to, like, not that I was disassociating a little bit, but I was just kind of like, I'm fine, everything's fine, there's nothing to talk about, nothing to see here, you know, like. But there was so much to, but I just didn't want to. I didn't want to have that attention. And I do remember there was this one girl who I didn't know very well at the time, and she kind of just, she saw what was happening, and I will always have like a special place in my heart for her, because she kind of like scooped in, like she put her arm around me. She like was like, "Hey, I really got to show you something," and like got me out of there. But I remember being like, wait, things are different now. Like, people, I don't know, like there was pity. There was like, there was that relief. Like, I think some people are like, oh, you know, it's almost like they're like, thank God it's not me. And I still feel that sometimes. I feel like sometimes people think that if they're in my circle, they are safe because something horrible happened to me. My kid died, so there's no chance their kid's going to die. Like, I feel like that is this other thing. There's all these other, right? Like, just...
Heather, have you been reading our texts? Back
I feel like maybe I should be in the text chain. Yeah,
yeah, it's like probably this is our conversation yesterday.
It's like that, you know, that meme where it's, you know, one in three people are crazy. Look around, you know, if it's not the two people closest to you, it's you. Like, so maybe if I surround myself with crazy people, then it will make me seem sane. Oh gosh. But I think that's like such a common human experience though. People think that it's going to rub off,
like
on
it's
them
contagious or something. Yeah.
Or like if they talk about it too much, I think it's like this thing where people don't necessarily know how to handle these situations. And so they're like, maybe I just won't touch it. Or, you know, maybe they go a little too hard and they overcompensate. And it's like it's taboo, right? It's like, oh, don't, we're not going to talk about that. We're not going to bring that up. And so I'm curious to hear, as you continued on in your journey after that first time back out, and you're trying to kind of resume a normal life while remembering your son, what was it like when people would kind of tiptoe around this conversation? Because I know it happens. It happens to all of us. We don't want to bring that up because it might make her feel bad. It might make her sad.
Well, and I also feel like, Kara, too, that it's almost always a projection, not a reflection of
right.
the person that's in the grief. This is how the other person is handling it.
Well, and it's interesting when you say that piece about, it's like they think that if they bring up Jake, all of a sudden I'm going to be like, oh shit, I had forgotten he died, right? Like, I mean, you're not the one, like, it's right. always there. Like you bringing it up is not going right. to make me cry. Like maybe it'll come to the surface sometimes if I'm feeling, but that's good. Like I'm comfortable. Like if I'm having a moment, I'm going to have a moment. Like, you know, I think sometimes I just want to be like, you do not have that. You don't have that much power or control where you are going to, you know, send me down a dark place. Like I can do that all on my own at any time. Like, so I always think it's funny, right? Like, I'm like, I didn't forget my kid died. I didn't forget about Jake, and you just randomly reminded me. But I sometimes think people think that, like, oh, we didn't want to make you sad. I'm like, okay, thanks. Like, I don't know. It's random. I'm like, here it is. But I do think sort of over the years, I've gotten, I don't know if it's more confident or more comfortable or sassy or all of the above at different times. Like, I'm just comfortable talking about Jake. I'm comfortable with my story. And sometimes, and that, I guess that's not even 100% true, because sometimes if I meet like a random person or if I'm talking with someone at the checkout line and they're like, hey, how many kids do you have? That for me is a really hard question. Like, that's just, you know, because it's hard to just randomly with someone you've just met be like, oh, I've done this so many different ways. So sometimes I will say like two, and then I just lie, right? I'm like, oh, 19 and 17, because that's what Jake would have been. And then it's weird because I'm just bold face lying. Or sometimes I just say one, and I feel guilty because I'm like, I just like kind of denied that he even existed. Sometimes one time, and this was weird because then I went down this whole thing. I said he was four. So I said like 19 and four, and they're like, oh, that's a big gap. And then I'm having this nonsense conversation that's not even true, but I don't always know, you know, it's like, you don't always know how to do it. So most of the time I am sort of more normal and will say like, oh, I have two, unfortunately my son passed away. And then I kind of keep that, like, I am more fluid at keeping like the conversation going and not putting it on them. But I do still like, yeah, it's hard sometimes. I don't always know how to answer it, you know, and
it takes practice. And sometimes it takes modeling, like seeing someone else do something similar, which is one of the reasons we come back to almost every episode. We're like, this is why we do this, because someone else may be going through something similar and they're like, I don't know how to answer that. Like, Kim and I have this conversation all the time where we have, you know, like an elevator pitch when we travel for keynote speeches. Or I was just talking to someone yesterday and I was like, yeah, I like won a massage. And so it's like a massage therapist that I didn't know. And she's like, well, what do you do for work? And I'm like, I'm a keynote speaker. And she's like, oh, what do you speak on? And I'm like, well, like no one wants to be the one to be like, well, kidnapped. Like, sometimes you don't want to get into those conversations, right? And so I think that's a very human thing, but sometimes it helps to have like someone model it and just say, you know, I had two kids. One of them unfortunately passed. It was very sad. Yes, very sad.
Yeah. Move on. Moving on. Yeah.
Sometimes we just need that.
Like, I always try to say, like, I am with time, I'm more gracious, I'm more like a kinder, softer version, all of the things. But sometimes I also am just, I'm like blunt, you know, and sometimes I don't know, like sometimes I'm just like, okay, yeah, he died, you know, and it's usually not to a stranger, but there are times when like someone is rubbing me the wrong way or something. And then if that's where the conversation goes, then I'm like, okay. And I'm not always super proud of myself when I do that, but sometimes it's instant gratification or something.
It's also not our job as survivors to mitigate or, you know, control other people's reactions to hearing about these things. We are not our own PR department. Yeah. Like, if you're asking, do you want me to bullshit you or do you want the truth? Because I'm happy to do either, but, you know, Kara talks about this all the time about how she's, I'm not mad, I'm just not masking. Yep. And I am
a
huge, huge masker, makeup and all. Yes. But I have a hard time making other people feel uncomfortable unless it is, you know, Min, copyright. That's fine with me. I'm good with that. But in general, I want them to feel comfortable with me because I'm okay talking about it. And so many people aren't, or they might catch you someone else on an off day. And I would rather them practice, for lack of a term, with me, knowing that, okay, you're not going to get anything on me. You're not reminding me that this happened, and figure that out. And then sometimes I will, like, hey, just so you know, it's maybe a better way to ask or not ask at all.
It's so recently, a friend of mine lost her daughter to cancer. And it was kind of like, I think it shattered for a lot of people, you know, kind of the notion I talked about earlier, that there was this like degree of protection, because how could two moms in Saratoga Springs who are so well liked and, you know, like, you know, I mean, like that has anything to do with anything, but like just this idea, like how could that happen? And in that, we had a lot of mutual friends or mutual acquaintances, and it was interesting to me. So sort of going off what you said, like I, a lot of people just came up to me and were like, you know, what should I say? What should I do? What was helpful to you? And really trying, I think, to do the right thing, say the right thing and all of that stuff. And a couple of times I was like, okay, do you want to work on it? Cause your delivery there was a little rough. So let's, why don't you try something different here? You know? And so kind of like what you said, like it wasn't a role I ever saw coming, but I actually think in some ways I was a little bit helpful because I was like, okay, so if you do that, she might react this way, but like maybe say this. Like, so I do think
that's so important.
Yeah, it's important.
So one thing that you talked about at the beginning, and I have been ruminating on this for so long because I am, again, with the weird verbiage, I'm really excited to talk about grief. And this is the big crossover where Kara and I, like, light bulbs, holy cow, you're speaking our exact language. Tell us about what that is and how you've experienced it.
Sure. Ambiguous grief. It's this idea that I just learned what it actually meant not that long ago, but I've talked about it for a long time. It basically, ambiguous grief is the grief of someone who is still alive. And I remember very much people saying to me, you have to grieve the son you thought you were going to have because your life is different now. And I was bullshit mad when people would say that to me. Like, I was at first, like when I was living, like when Jake was still alive, and I was like, how dare you? Like, no, that's my boy. It doesn't matter. Like, I just was super mama bear mode and like couldn't make sense of it. Although I knew it was true, right? Like, there was this like little voice in my head that was like, that makes sense. Like, this is, you're not going to have that picture. You know, that picture I just talked about of like walking on the sand with your two boys, like that's never going to happen. Like, you've got to come to terms with that and make peace with that and all of those things. And I think after he died, so much more of that made sense to me. And I realized that had I given myself more latitude during, like, when he was still alive, like, maybe that would have, you know, that would have helped in some way. And I do try to talk with people about it, and talking about it even in this more general sense of grief isn't just death, right? Like, grief is just, you can grieve the life you thought you were going to have. And I think that everybody has parts of that, right? Like, not everyone has lost people close to them, but everybody to various degrees has these points in life, right? And I think that that's, to me, it's been such a helpful way to look at life a little bit, because it's, we all think our life is going to be a certain way, or at least I did, right? Like, you know, you think you're gonna go to college, and then you're gonna graduate college, and then you're going to do this, or you're gonna marry your high school boyfriend, or like whatever you think your life is going to be. There's no guarantees. There's no, and I think when something big happens to us, it's that time when you really just have to, you look at the life you thought you were going to have and the life you're living, and you have to come to terms with it. And I feel like it's still, I feel like it's a work in progress, right? But I think that it's this comfort of knowing, it's like there's comfort in it. And to me, like once I realized there was kind of a, I don't know, like a formal name for it, that it actually was this, this thing that existed in the world that didn't just exist in my head or in conversation, it made it feel more okay, I think.
It's validating.
Yeah, like it made it feel real. Like it didn't just make it feel like an other thing where, because I am the queen of like going down that rabbit hole of like the slippery slope of like, you know, I mean, I always call them like the 2 a.m. like, you know, at 2 a.m. the world is over, right? Like at 2 a.m. I can go down any rabbit hole to like the depths of like, whatever. And then I used to always say, like, so I would do it when Jake was alive, like, and my husband would be like, oh, you had another rough night. And I'd be like, well, in the light of day, things are okay. You know, like when I'd get out of bed and I'm like in the light of day, but I always call them those like 2 a.m. like terrors or like whatever. And a lot of that was working through some of this
ambiguous grief,
like this sort of like, you know, it's not the life you thought you were going to have, but it's the life you have. And what can you do with that?
We talk about it in terms of before and after. I've always thought that way. And when I look back, I have just a few points in my life where there is before and after the assault, before and after this relationship. Like there's those things for me. And if I'd have known that there was this kind of ability to grieve that as it was going on, you know, we talk about people being in active trauma have a hard time processing it. But even if you have that word to say, I know I'm in active trauma, it helps you grant yourself a little grace. At least this is what I've found. I know that I am not my best self right now because I'm in active trauma. And it does not mean that I'm putting it off. It means I have to get myself to a safe place where I can work on that. So for you, it could have been, all right, I'm settling into what is this new normal. Or for some people, it's okay, now I, my child, my parent has this diagnosis, that's the word or the language that I need to start settling into that. And Kara, I don't know if, did you feel that as much for like in high school?
I don't necessarily think that I felt that a ton, just because like, I don't know very many people who at 15 were really kind of like planning their lives with any sort of certainty. Like we might have had vague ideas, but I didn't really have any ideas about what my life would look like. But I've definitely had these moments of grieving, and I've talked publicly about, you know, just different things that I've had to deal with, whether that's in my marriage or my oldest child has brain inflammation, and so, you know, it's been a fight with him like ever since he was five. I think it's a very human experience, and it's definitely something that I can resonate with, because it's like, this is not like, I am not the mom that I thought I would be, right? Like, first of all, let's just say, who wasn't the best mom in the world before they had children? I was such a good mom. I was like, I'm the best mom ever. And then I had kids and I'm like,
all the things you would never do.
The kids are out of my job.
Do all of them. Yeah.
I think that we often in life just imagine who we're going to be or how we're going to do things. And then reality kicks in and we're like, oh, sweet summer child, you knew nothing.
You knew nothing.
It's my current favorite. Because I'm on the TikToks.
Sweet summer child.
That's going to be a lot of our listeners too, whether it is prolonged exposure to a trauma or one specific incident no matter what, if you're here, you're probably interested in this genre, maybe us, I don't know, but this genre, and Heather and all of our guests, because you can relate in some way. And what you were saying about this type of grief is something I think is so profound, because it does impact every single person multiple times throughout their lifespan. Have you found a way to have those conversations with like close friends or family? I mean, I don't want you to speak for your husband or your son, but like, what do those conversations look like for you?
You know, it's kind of one of those, like, two things are true. And some of it is starting to come to light. Like, cause I feel like as a family of three, like as Ethan, Brian, and I, like, we tried really hard to keep Jake present and to have open communication about his loss, right? Like, we never tried to shy away from that. Yet, looking back on it now that I'm talking about things so much more, I was like, we kind of did. We would cheers Jake every night at dinner, but that didn't mean we were really talking about things or having real tools about how to do any of that. So interestingly, when Ethan was writing his college essay, he just finished his freshman year. He goes to Syracuse University. I don't know, a couple of years when he was writing his essay, he wrote about calling 911. He wrote, you know, it starts with Ethan, call 911. Mom screams. Like, and he wrote things that I feel like I just missed, right? Like that I just, like I kind, I felt bad, right? Like he talked about how he doesn't remember a lot of Jake, but he remembers going to like pick him up at PT or like watching him at OT. But he would think about like how his friends would get to go watch their brothers at like baseball games or at other things. And like, he kind of talked a little bit about that. Right. And I feel like I didn't give him great tools because he was talking about like, he was kind of grieving the brother he thought he was going to have, or the family of four that became a family of three. Like in his own way, he was in that same space, and he doesn't love to talk about it now. Right. Like, and I feel like some people have been like, oh, is he going to be a guest on your podcast? He has no interest. I don't think he listens. I don't think he doesn't love, like, he loves that I can be a resource for other people. He doesn't love that I'm out here talking about it, because to him, he just hasn't processed it yet. But it was really telling to me, or not telling, but it was really, I don't know, I felt sad a little bit because I thought we're so ahead of this and, oh, we're trying to do all that. But it goes to show you can only be where you are. And there's always room to be better at it, no matter how many years or how much time you've gone through it or any of that. Like, there's still places where it just doesn't work. And with Brian, it was interesting. Christine was like, you should have him on the show. So he was like my third guest. And we talked about some things that we had not talked about in like 13 years. It was this super therapeutic session, right? Like we ended up being two episodes because we talked so much. And I didn't know going into it that we needed to talk about some of these things, but it was kind of awesome because, again, I thought we were like kind of open all along, making it clear to have these conversations. But even when you don't think you're burying it, sometimes you're burying it.
Exactly. Yeah. So if there's one thing that you want to leave our listeners with, as a takeaway, maybe from your experience or what you've overcome since Jake passed, what would that be?
I guess it always comes back to, it comes back to sort of what we talked about earlier with like, don't shy away from some of these things, right? Like, it's validating to the person, I think, you know, certainly for grief, like for loss of my child, and, you know, it validates their existence. It validates the relationship. Like, don't be afraid to talk about it. And I think that that's a little bit of these intersects, like by ignoring it, all you're sort of doing is not seeing a huge part of who I am. And if you can, it's not saying that we have to go down these deep, dark roads every single day, like, but acknowledge, you know, I think if you can be there for people and just not shy away from these important things that have happened to them, then I think that is, I feel like that's a takeaway. And whether it's grief or trauma, right? Like, it, some of it defines, not defines us, but it's part of our story. It's part of our fabric. And just don't ignore it.
I love that, is have the hard conversation.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So one of the things that makes us a little different that we like to do to really empower our guests as well as motivate and activate our followers is ask for a call to action. So we want to know, how can we activate our listeners? What can they do? How can they support you? Where can they follow you? Tell us all the things.
All the things. So I am on Instagram, Heather Strotter. Heather S. Strotter, I guess I should probably know that. Heather S. Strotter. And then also Jake's Help from Heaven is on Instagram as well under Jake's Help. And I would love for people to listen to A Place of Yes. It is our, it's a work in progress, but we're working really hard at it. And we are having some really, really great conversations. And I think sometimes people are like, oh, it's a grief podcast. I don't want to listen to that. It'll make me sad. And I got to tell you, every conversation we have, there is like, there's laughter and there's joy and there's hope and there's resilience. And I don't think that my episodes make you sad. Like sometimes there's sad subjects, but I think that we just are talking to really, there's really great stories out there. So I would say, please listen to A Place of Yes.
Well, thank you so much for joining us. This has been a really great conversation. And I love what you're doing and how you're keeping your son's memory alive.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm grateful for the work that we're doing because I think it's so great to share these stories and to see where in so many ways there are these like intersections where, you know, it's basically just be good humans, right? Like let's just all be good humans.
Yeah. Yeah.
And be so
the
hard.
more we have, right. And the more we have the difficult conversations amongst safe spaces, the easier it becomes to have these difficult conversations in spaces that are a little more uncomfortable. So thank you for being willing to be a little uncomfortable and vulnerable with us. It's making a difference, and we just can't wait to see.
Survivor's Guide to True Crime is hosted and executive produced by Kimberly Corbin Rourke and Kara Robinson Chamberlain.
If you love what we do here, please don't forget to follow, rate, and review the show in your podcast player. It's an easy and free way to help us and help more people find the show.
To learn more about the guests featured or to find resources and information discussed on the show, visit survivorsguidetotruecrime.com.
Thanks for listening.
Well, see you later.